Welcome to the Vet Show, episode number 10, brought to you by Precision Transport, all part of the Coach Rob Podcast Network. Coach Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, man. I can't tell you how excited I am on this show. We've got, I call him the man, the myth, and the legend. If we get into his credentials and background, you'll see why I think the listeners are going to really dig Mr. Jeff Scott. How you doing, brother?
Good, thanks.
Thank you so much for being on us. Yeah, absolutely.
This is going to be a good one. I'm excited. I always like to have a guest. It's just to bring a new, you know, outlook on things and just to kind of get to know that guest a little bit more and then kind of what another vet rider goes through. We all have heard my struggles. I think everybody's probably tired of hearing my struggles, Coach, but maybe we could hear somebody else's. That might be a good change.
No, I don't think anybody's tired of hearing your struggles. And like we said before we turned on the recording, you know, our listeners are great. I've surveyed a couple hundred of them and said, hey, what kind of questions would you have for somebody that we would have on the Vet Show? And I've got a good 20, 25 different types of questions that came back. I chose a half a dozen and we'll see what we get through here today. Maybe we'll do a second show depending on Jeff's availability. But it's very important for us that our listeners know that we're listening to them. And we want to answer those frustrations. We want to create clarity with things that people are struggling with. As we always say in the show, we don't live in a glass house. So I'm really excited about this. And we really appreciate you, Jeff, coming on board.
Yeah. And so, and we get those questions, right? We get those questions from the YouTube comments. We get a lot of DMs. We get a lot of feedback from you guys listening on YouTube, on the other platforms that we stream on. So thank you guys for that. Continue to do that because that's how we get the questions that you have answered.
Absolutely.
But let's start, Coach. We've done this 9 shows in a row so far.
Okay.
Now this is episode number 10. When the number 10 comes to mind, who do you think of?
Right off the
top. Hold on. Yeah, hold on.
Let's let the guest go.
I apologize. We should let the guest go.
Yes, sir. Go for it, Jeff.
Number 10, who comes to mind?
You know, being 100% transparent, I'm going to have to feed Dan's. I'm not a huge number guy. I love Justin Brayton, the little bit that I've seen him race. And, you know, I raced back in the mid, late 80s. Then I got burnt out on it. Then I had a huge hiatus. And then I kind of started following it again, probably the first race I think I watched was the year when Roczen went to Honda and was doing real well. But as far as like the number 10, you know, this Justin Brayton, just the way he carries himself. And I have seen some of his earlier rides, like when he was a top 5 guy. And I mean, he definitely hauled the mail. So a good rider and just seems like a really good guy, at least from what I see.
You know what I like about Justin Brayton is he fits perfectly in with our show and our guests. He's a vet rider, man. He's over 30. He was still, I think he's the oldest racer to win a main event. I won Daytona Supercross a couple years ago.
That's right. Not just any event, Daytona.
Coach, I think that might have been one of the most exciting races I've watched in the last 5 years. It was awesome to see that happen.
Yeah, I totally agree. Are you going to run?
The only other thing I wanted to add about Justin Brayton, he obviously has a really good sense of humor because I think it was on, probably, you know, one of Roczen's Instagrams when he was showing his trophy room. And then JE chirped in and said, you know, I didn't see one of these in there. I just thought, you know, that was just perfect.
That was spot on. Yep, that's true. You have people that are champions and then you have the Daytona champion. So there's almost like a class of its own. So absolutely. Yep. Dan, what are you thinking outside of Brayton? Who else comes to mind?
Man, I'll be honest, Coach. Justin Brayton is the only one that sticks out in my mind with number 10. I know you have a couple others in your pocket, but for me, it's Justin Brayton. And
I'm surprised. I would have thought you said Bradshaw because you had mentioned what a big Bradshaw fan you are in the stories that you have with him.
I was, but I love Bradshaw, but I also love Ricky Johnson and Wardy and stuff. But Bradshaw was awesome too. But I don't know, something about Brayton, like Jeff said, the way he carries himself, the career that he's had, and I will tell you, Justin Brayton is probably the most down-to-earth human being. Him and AP are the most down-to-earth human beings in the pits. And I think I gotta shout this out, Coach. You know, AC, my guy AC and Brayton on Race Day Live now is incredible.
Yep, the depth is great. Think about if they had those two plus Daniel Blair. You know, put all political agendas aside, right? Forget about the politics of NBC, but just think about those three and their perspective and the experience. Daniel, arena cross, AC, amateur phenom, 250. I mean, and then Brayton with just that durability of a diesel engine. Talking about the insights and perspectives and the way they can just tee up and feed off each other. It'd be better than the main show.
I'll give you a little nugget here on that I don't think Daniel would mind sharing with everybody, but Daniel has been working with Justin and AC.
Awesome.
Both. So you're getting a little Daniel Blair in there.
I love it. Well, and it shows. And Daniel's been trained, right? He has that expertise as an athlete, but then to have that experience with his mentor and all that, that's very, very cool. Now it's next level for sure. And it's a good change. It's the right step in the right direction. Yeah, I understand your thing with Bradshaw, because 8, like we talked about on show number 8, I think a lot of us go there. I kind of have like a 3-tier when it comes to number 10. If you were to ask me, the first person that comes to mind, I think a Big Bird, Larry Ward, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just the first thing that comes to my mind. And then right behind that would be a Damon Huffman, you know, when he's out there ripping around. And then my sentimental is going to be Ernesto Fonseca, for obvious reasons, career cut short with a severe accident. And a lot of people don't realize even Travis Pastrana was number 10. So the list is pretty interesting, at least in my little marble brain that goes on. I'm like, oh, gosh, I remember Hoffman going from Cowie to Suzuki and then, you know, seeing Ernesto when he got that Honda deal. And that's when they, if I'm not mistaken, they still had Universal Studios. So they had the Woody Woodpecker on the side of the shrouds. And I don't know, just that year, it seemed like it was actually like this weekend. Maybe it was just me. Didn't it seem like the bikes, all the factory Hondas looked darker red, almost like a retro red? Was that just me, or did it seem like they had a little bit more of a deep, richer color?
I think it's because they don't have a lot of other stuff on the graphics. The graphics in the is primarily red. In the years past, it's been kind of white, and then you got some blue in there. It's really red now, and it really does pop. You're right.
Yeah, I thought it looked so good, but yeah, that would be mine with the number 10, and I'm sure. Well, you know, as I'm saying that out loud, think about Jimmy Button. He ran number 10, and was he running the 426 or the 400 when he was riding for Yamaha? I remember him in the Fox blue and white.
I think.
Was he on the
400? Jimmy was a 426. I think Henry was on a 400 at first, right?
Yeah, because Jeff, didn't Henry win on the 400 at Vegas? And then I think Jimmy came on kind of second tier on the 426. I'll have to do some research.
You know, again, on that stuff, I mean, I just had enough of a hiatus that, I mean, I know those bikes and I know those names. I mean, the best thing I can tell you about, you know, one of my friends had a 400YZ, I almost broke my leg trying to start it, so I didn't know how. But, yeah, I don't, like I said, as far as those guys' results, I mean, I know some numbers, certainly know the names, but I couldn't tell you many races that they were in.
Well, Dan, the cool part is we know the comments below, people throw it in there. And I just thought of another one, and I'm glad I did, because we're going to have egg all over our face. Airtime Cooper.
Oh, yeah. This is a zoo guy, Cooper. You said his name. Now he was all time.
As we're talking, I'm just kind of thinking, and you know what's interesting is, for some reason, a lot of Suzuki's come in on that. You know, I remember Mark Barnett running number 10 very, very early on in his career. But it's almost like a predominant. You had Hoffman going to Suzuki. I don't know if he brought 10 over there with him. Airtime Cooper. Yeah, it's cool stuff. Pastrana, Suzuki.
Yeah.
So good stuff all the way around. But yeah, welcome to the show, Jeff. Welcome to the numbers game that we like to play. And it's always cool to kind of go down memory lane. We get a lot of feedback, both on the messages on YouTube as well as the DM. So glad you guys enjoy it. And again, thanks for sticking around. Love it.
All right, Jeff Scott, let's get to know you a little bit. Give us your background, brief background, how long you've been riding, maybe the class that you ride, and just give us a little history on Mr. Jeff Scott.
Well, so I first started riding in 76. My brother actually told me if I could save up the money for a down payment, I got a TY80. I was always pretty mechanical, so I mean, I did all the work on it, and what I would do is, like when they would mostly ride trails, I would, you know, work on all the bikes. That was my deal. I'd get them all ready to go. They'd take me, probably, you know, just rode, you know, different kinds of bikes, all used stuff. Finally, I think it was probably, gosh, I think 79. So I was in ninth grade. I got my first KTM 250 and started racing it and got good pretty quick. The first four novice races I won. I mean, one race I crashed in first turn, one first intermediate race, because back then Colorado just had novice, intermediate, and expert. Everybody told me, when you go to intermediate, it's a way different deal. And I'm like, I probably whole shot of that race and won. The second moto, I think I got fifth, but got through that. And then, when I was an expert, had a little bit of help from mainly from like Vickery Yamaha. They're a pretty good place out of Denver. I mean, I think even like when Yamaha comes here, if they have to do like any dyno work, I know they may have some of that in their semis, but I know for a while they would do it there. One time I was in there when the Nationals were here, when Lachine was running Yamaha, and I remember walking down into the service department and Keith McCarty was there, and I just knew who he was, and I said, so how's Ron doing? With that kind of has kind of that different voice. He goes, Ron, he's doing pretty good. And I think Lachine smoked everybody, but did that. I think probably in the state of Colorado, again, back then I was probably a top five rider. War bikes out, would get them, we could afford them. But then I think I had just done so much, and I trained pretty hard back then, but it was mainly running. But like, I was the guy that I'd go running when it was 100 degrees out. So I just thought, this is what I'm going to be riding in. Didn't do much weight training, then, but, it got, I'll never forget the one race. It was a decent race. It was right when Thunder Valley first opened, because most of my races were at the old Lakewood Cycle Park. And, I remember the Friday before the race was on a Sunday, the Friday before, I went out with some friends and got drunk. And that was in my mind that I knew, you're over this, because you can't do this. And I raced, and there were guys that normally I'd lap, I was having problems getting around. So then from there, I took the, like I said, just took a break. I think it was just, I had just done it so much and lived it so much. And I, deep down I knew, first of all, back then, with the exception of Tomac now, that if you lived in Colorado, it was tough. Because like all of our guys, there were a few guys that would stay here and they continue to get the number one plate. And then a couple of guys would venture out to, do even California or the Florida, like the winter series. When they'd come back to the Nationals, they'd normally maybe be top 15 guys. So, I mean, we certainly weren't in the top echelon, at least back then. But now I just, like I said, I kind of knew, hey, this was probably a long shot. Now let's keep things real. Fast forward to, 96, I had four brothers that were all home builders at one point or another. And I always did all their interior trim work. So, I mean, whether it was flooring or, the cabinets or whatever. So the way that helped me when I was riding was I could always be pretty selective of when I wanted to work. And, it allowed me to practice when I wanted. And I could work weekends or nights or whatever. But, I incorporated. And then, in 2000, it's crazy as this sounds, some guy owed me some money. And he goes, well, would you take this YZ 250 two stroke? And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I'll take it. I've ridden in a while. So started riding. And, thought, this is pretty fun. Entered a race. I'd probably ridden it like 3 weeks. And I entered a 30 vet expert, and they didn't want to let me race it. But I talked to the lady. I said, what? I used to be pretty good. A couple of these guys will vouch for me. They let me race it. My goal was to get a top 10, which I did, which was pretty shocking because the guys were pretty fast. But again, I was in pretty decent shape. So I never really stopped working out. And, there was a race in another couple weeks, and a friend of mine, shout out Super Smooth if he watches this. He said, hey, there's a race, pretty high, good paying race. And, I went with him to practice. He had kept riding, since 85 when I stopped. My nickname was Airtime. If something was being jumped in the mid 80s in Colorado, it was either me or this other guy doing it. There was a one over onto a tabletop, and I got a little sideways before it, framed it, and just heard the pop. And I'm like, man, that didn't sound good. So I rolled to a stop, and I went to go put my foot out to support me, and it just buckled. So I knew it probably wasn't good. The laundry list of injuries. So left tail is shattered, left calcaneus or heel shattered, right heel shattered, right Achilles ruptured, left peroneal tendon ruptured. So got all that repaired. I didn't want that to be the last time that I rode. So I rode one time after that, and then that was it. And then, I don't know, you know, it must have been, I have to think, probably 5 years ago. Just said, you know what? I don't have to do the things that I used to do, but I still have talent on a bike. And I love dirt bikes. You know, probably in 2000, I kind of migrated towards snow stuff, snowmobiles. The snow bike craze started, and I was super reluctant. So I was like, you know what? I got so much invested in snowmobiles. I don't want to do this snow bike thing. I knew if I rode one, I'd probably like it. So, I mean, fast forward to right now. I mean, snow bikes, snowmobiles during the winter, dirt bikes during the summer, and I train pretty hard. I don't think I'll ever race again, just because, I mean, I still have that racer's mentality and probably a little bit of the, you know, the extreme gene. I mean, when some people see what I do at my age, they're kind of like, man, you know, you probably, you know, family and two kids, and I get all that. But I mean, you know, one of my favorite stories I tell people, so Thunder Valley is literally 5 minutes from where I lived, which is so cool because, I mean, I can literally gear up at my house, go there, pay the $25, ride for an hour on just a beat to death track, which I love. Hate it when I hate it, but I also like it when people tell me, oh, that's just too rough. You know, I'll go there when it's prepped. And it's like, no, I want to go there when it's miserable. That's me. That's what I want to do. But, you know, but so I know I can clear all the jumps there, but I tell everybody, you know, I made an agreement with God. You know, I won't do the whopper. I know I can, but that's going to always keep me grounded. And, you know, and if I'm fool with somebody or they come up on me and they jump, and I'm like, well, you know, this time, you know, it won't hurt. Just, you know, I'm going to get this in third. It ain't no big deal. And it's like, nah, you know, that's just part of the agreement. And knock on wood, I mean, I haven't had any hard get-offs. It doesn't mean that I won't. But, I mean, I'm pretty, I never feel really out of control, at least now. But short of that, I mean, that's kind of a story. And I'll still go to some races around here to watch. But, I mean, as far as participating, I mean, I sent a picture to Rob. I just bought a 2024.5 Rockstar Edition. I'm kind of a husky guy. And the guy that I bought it from, I didn't know who he was at first. But then when I went out and met him, and he raced Glenn Hell and Betts. I think he did pretty good. But in over 30, you know, A, and over 50 A, he's the top guy in the States. His name's Brian Sabah. I don't know if that name ends up, but bought this Rockstar dish, got like, I think, 0.7 hours on it. And, you know, I used to be a Church of 350 guy. I mean, I still love 350s. I mean, I, you know, have a local guy that did my suspension, stock motor, ride it to Thunder Valley. I'll ride it on single track. That's kind of my riding story. And, you know, right now with Coach Rob, I've just, you know, the nutrition and the physical stuff is cool. I think it's helped me quite a bit. Now, for this year, I'm starting to focus a little bit more on technique. Yeah, more in addition to just what I can see. But I mean, just the one thing that happened to me when I broke my ankles is I was always pretty right hand, right, you know, right leg dominant. But that really forced me because the Achilles healed pretty fast. But, you know, no, just last summer, probably I got the same amount of strength in my left leg that was in my right. And that was all through some of the exercise. I mean, I tell Rob, you know, my favorite is the super slow challenge because that really forced me. Cause like I have the coordination that I can pick up things pretty quick, but I also, it's not great because I can compensate pretty quick. And then sooner or later, that becomes the roadblock to really getting better. And like really when I started, I think riding pretty well up the track, I could start to see, you know what? I'm not squeezing the bike really with my legs. 15 minutes into this, I'm standing up on the bike, but way more weight on my right side. So then when I go to cook, you know, a right turn, I'm not weighting the outside peg. And it's like, man, why am I feeling so squirrely? But then when I would slow everything down and be like, all right, really weight this, then it started to feel more like it did in 85, which I don't know how my technique was then, but I know I never got tired and I was pretty fast, but I mean, I never thought about it. I don't know that I ever squeezed the bike with my leg, but I know I never got arm pump either. So I'm guessing I probably did maybe subconsciously. But anyway, long-winded answer, but that's kind of my motorcycle journey. But I mean, I'm hoping, like I said, I'm 60. I'm hoping I can ride snow, dirt into my 80s, if possible. I mean, the snowmobile is a lot more physical. You still need technique to ride it, but I like the fact that it weighs 600 pounds. Me geared up with a backpack, I mean, out of the shower, I'm 180. Probably with all that stuff, I'm probably 240. We're at 10,000 feet above sea level. I mean, I like seeing, you know, on the Garmin, okay, this is what my heart did. This is, you know, this is how I need to fuel at least one day before that. And, but anyway, so.
Jeff, you mentioned the physical part of you, right? And one of the challenges, and what it sounds like one of the hurdles that you've had is your legs and your feet, ankles, you know, your lower extremities. Besides that, is there anything other, you know, physically that was a hurdle for you, and how did you overcome it?
You know, what was crazy was when I raced, and again, and we would, you know, certainly not by today's standards, but back then, we would jump stuff now that the guys, you know, like Jet doing a huge quad, you'd be like, wow, is anybody else going to do that? Back in those days, I mean, fortunately, the only thing I ever did, I broke my wrist once, and it was just kind of a fluky thing. And I mean, I was just really lucky because I had a lot of saddle time on a bike and a lot of crashes. Remember, you know, getting the wind knocked out of me, and, you know, just that awful feeling when you're, you know, you're making noise, but, you know, nothing's really happening for a while. But I mean, if I had to say right now, and I think I've always, you know, I've talked to Rob about this. I've never had great flexibility. I've really tried to work on it a lot now. But I mean, I've always had lower back. I wouldn't say instability because I have strong abs. I do a lot of ab work. But also, I mean, if you ever saw me, I mean, so I'm like I said, probably 5'8", 180. If I had to guess, probably 10% body fat. Eat pretty well. But I've always had pretty big quads and pretty big glutes. So, I mean, I would never like do squats or anything in the gym because I never wanted to because I didn't want them any bigger. You know, if I got pants with my right waist size, my legs would, if they'd be so tight in them. But I mean, to this day, I still have to be, you know, really cognizant of my lower back and it moves from side to side. You know, again, I've talked with Rob about, you know, I use a SoRite. I think probably some of it's my psoas and some of it's probably just wear and tear. I mean, because so like yesterday, it was 25 degrees here. And I didn't want to do anything super hardcore because I had just ridden snow on Friday. And it was, you know, a pretty burly workout. But so I put, you know, 30 pounds in a backpack and I did a ruck through my neighborhood for like 4 miles. Heart rate was probably like 90. But a couple times, you know, I live in a fairly hilly area. It'd go up to like 120, 130. But I can tell you, like last night, this morning, my quads were blown up. It was just because I hadn't done that before. And I'm a big road bike guy in the summer, and I like doing cycling. But no, I mean, again, knock on wood, other than those injuries, I mean, that's really, you know, I cut the tips off of 2 fingers, you know, just not being smart. But as far as like lung injuries, just the ankles. But I mean, man, you know, when you're in a wheelchair for a while, it was, you know, I mean, I was still, you know, I was married, had one kid at the time, and I'll never forget in the emergency room, you know, my wife and my mom came, and the x-ray tech, you know, wheeled me and brought me back in, and, you know, shouldn't have, but told my wife and my mom, well, you know, I think he got lucky. And I just said, no, I didn't. And he goes, well, I'm not seeing anything on here. And I said, there's no way I got lucky. I go, what's crazy is when I hit, I just rolled out of it. So I mean, it wasn't like, you know, yard sale everywhere. They said that I knew it wasn't good. And fortunately with that, I had a really good surgeon. One of my brothers, you know, built a home for a very well-known shoulder surgeon. And as we were driving back, called my brother. He gave me this shoulder surgeon's number. He said, go to this hospital, ask for this doctor. He's one of the best ankle surgeons in the state. After he did everything, about a year later, I was actually building homes I had started building homes in the Vail Valley. And I went to the step back then. It was the Stedman Hawkins Clinic. It wasn't just the Stedman Clinic. And I got to see, he at the time, he was supposed to be one of the world's best foot and ankle surgeons. He had written all the books that, at least at that time, that if that's what you wanted to do in orthopedics, this is who you would talk to. He was based out of San Francisco. His name was Roger Mann. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll never forget. I was able to get in to see him. He'd only come in the winter twice a month to ski. He would see a few patients. And you could just tell, first of all, his bedside manner, it was just another level. I mean, it was like he knew me forever. And on there, the first thing, he looked at my x-rays and was, okay, well, you got some hardware in here. How's it feel? Walk down the hall. And I walked back, you know, forth, and he said, he goes, there's an old saying. He goes, you don't walk on your x-rays. And I go, what do you mean by that? He goes, these injuries aren't great. He goes, I'm surprised you can even walk like you do. And the one thing he did tell me, and I've struggled with this, and I even heard Ryan Deegan say, you know, he got all the hardware out of his body. He is great. I always thought, man, should I get some of that hardware out of my left ankle? But he told me that Roger Mann said, I would never get this ring. He goes, you have no idea how lucky you are that you can do what you do. He goes, your tail of us look like gravel. And he said, you know, you're probably going to be, you know, getting some arthritis as you get older. But, you know, knock on wood, I mean, you know, I think I have really good genetics. I mean, my dad lived like 98. My mom was 92. Between that and, like, I tell everybody, working out pretty consistently since I was in my early 20s, try and eat real well. And, you know, just, you know, whatever God's plan is for me. But, I mean, I'm still, you know, pretty high performing, at least according to the data. You know, I'm probably in the 5th, 6th percentile of guys 60, at least for overall fitness.
And Dan, what's sort of cool about this is, and you've, Dan yourself, you started the program. Remember, the very first step that we always do is we take body measurements looking for muscle symmetry. When you look at the idea that a human moves through three planes of movement, left, right, above and below the belly button, front and back, and you take and put that into the same three dimensions of movement on a motorcycle, left and right peg, above and below the seat, and front and behind the pegs. Well, now all of a sudden you've got atrophy and you have immobility of a joint. And that's when you start getting into compensation injuries, because now think about it. All of a sudden you're shifting to one side or the other. And this motorcycle, as we always refer to on the show, is a moving gyroscope. So for every action, there's an equal and equivalent reaction. And that's what I think is so cool about the opening, you know, explanation that Jeff just gave. It's like, he kind of joked, just, you know, Talius here, Achilles here. Think about that. All around that lower ankle, lower leg, just injury upon injury, scar tissue and all that goes with it. And I love the way that you described that, Jeff. It's like, yes, you've pulled through it, but you were willing to do things that were a little unorthodox. And I think that's what makes the difference. So props to you on that one.
Well, the one big injury I had was a foot, is a navicular in my right foot, and it was shattered into gravel. And Jeff, you could probably attest to this. Feet don't heal fast. That's the biggest challenge, Coach. You know that because of the lack of blood flow and whatnot, but it's a pretty miserable recovery just because it doesn't heal as fast as other extremities in the body.
Well, and those, what people don't realize is your ankle's the furthest distance from your heart, right? So you have gravity. It has to offset to bring unoxygenated blood. We refer to it as venous blood flow. Gravity's got to offset that. Then you have all that inflammation and swelling from the initial, you know, injury. Then if you get surgery, then you've got the chemicals that are in the bloodstream. Those have to come out. You have all that lymphatic fluid. That has to come out. So that's where elevation, compression, manual massage towards the heart makes all the difference in the world. But yeah, that's the part that we have a tendency to overlook. So you're exactly right, man. Feet,
hey, Coach,
so far away. Yeah.
Sidetrack. Will you note this down real quick? I do want, on a future show, I want to talk about inflammation. And inflammation being a good thing. I wanted to pick your brain. Sorry. I'm sorry I didn't have to derail you, but I heard something this week that kind of made me think, and I wanted to talk to you about it. Anyhow, Joe,
and to piggyback on what you were saying, that's what actually got me into cycling. I mean, I rode mountain bikes once in a while, but I was never a huge mountain bike guy, honestly, because I just knew how bad, especially going downhill, you know, at least on the trails around here, which are pretty much granite. It hurts when you have a get off on it. I mean, I never minded the climb, but a lot of the places here, I would do the climb and then run the road on the way back. But with the side, with the road bike, that's the main reason was, and that's what the first surgeon told me, was, you know, your ankles don't have a great blood supply anyway. And I mean, even to this day, I mean, some of the stuff I do for my feet, people would look at me like, are you crazy? I mean, you tell somebody, have you ever done toe yoga? I mean, if you want to get frustrated, watch a couple of videos on YouTube about toe yoga. I mean, when I work out now, I wear the toe separators to keep my toes apart. you know, always using the massage gun on him every night, trying to keep fascia, you know, broken up. I mean, I'll even use the roll recovery on him, which, I mean, it's painful, but I mean, it's, you know, again, like he said, I mean, and I had never really had that, obviously, any kind of trauma like that, but I mean, it took, well, I mean, I'm still making gains, and probably some of that is because, you know, the physical therapy company probably wasn't as vested in me as I would have liked. But I mean, you know, certainly now, I mean, when someone has ankle injuries, I mean, I can let them know, hey, this is what worked for me. This is what didn't work. But I mean, you know, like I said, it's ongoing for sure.
Yeah. You, as a vet rider, Jeff, I could assume you're very busy, like most of us, right? We have jobs, families, we're trying to get in, the thing that we enjoy most, and that's riding, training. How many hours a week do you spend working, cross training, riding?
So best case scenario for me, it's tougher in the winter. I was just having this conversation with my family the other night, because they asked me how riding was. In summer, it's not a huge production. I mean, other than maintenance on the bike, I'm super close to Thunder Valley. If I ride trails, I'm 45 minutes from there. The winter is a lot different because it's a full day to ride a couple hours there. I mean, it's far. There's lots of fuel. There's lots of maintenance. You know, just to gear up takes 20 minutes. But best case scenario for me is I'm riding at least once a week. And if I can do that, I'm pretty happy. You know, with my work schedule, again, I mean, I incorporated in 95. I'm pretty fortunate. I have, you know, really one architect that sends me work, and it's only logistically where I'm at. So I'm about it, you know, I mean, anybody that runs their own business, or even if you don't, I mean, the hardest thing to, you know, get more of is time. The only way you can do it is become more efficient. So I'm pretty fortunate with that. But like I said, if I can, riding wise, once a week, whatever, if that's a full day, if that's a half day, it is what it is. Training, for me, again, you know, full disclosure, I mean, you know, I wouldn't say I'm tightly wound, but I mean, you know, back in the day, you know, I tell everybody, you know, I used to love seeing, he was a really good friend, but he was a psychologist, because he would always give me the straight, you know, hey, Jeff, you're being an asshole or whatever. If I was, whereas, you know, some of your friend or family member, oh, you know, you're fine, there's nothing wrong. Well, what I need is, I could either probably be on antidepressants, which I don't want to do, or I can work out. And, you know, and now I think it's as radical, because I don't work out as much as I used to, but I still work out quite a bit. But I mean, it's just, you know, hate to say, yeah, it's a lifestyle, but I mean, it really is. For me, it has to be incorporated into it. And I mean, you know, one of the things I always like, so I bought a Bowflex when they first came out. It's probably 2000, 2001. I still have it, still work out with it. You know, I just love the increased resistance. I spent, you know, thousands of hours in the gym too, but I was never a heavy weight guy. I always wanted to just be able to recover fast. And I don't know why. I just kind of thought that was cool. And I like the fact that, you know, I was, you know, somewhat muscled, but like I could go running, I could ride a bike. You know, I wasn't, you know, just some, you know, big dude that looked like, you know, he was juicing or whatever. And I was never that big, but I just always, you know, had muscle on me. But no, if I had to put it into the terms, like in a week, and if I just look at my riding time, it's probably 8 hours a week that I mean, between exercise and that, I mean, I try and keep my workouts. If it's just weight stuff, it's probably like, you know, I started at noon today before I got on. I mean, I did the just easy because my quads were still pretty blown up. Super easy elliptical for 10 minutes, a concept two rower for 10 minutes. And then, you know, God bless Rob, man. I was the guy, three sets of 8 to 10 every time for 20 plus years. We started mixing it up, and it's like, first of all, going slower. And then, I mean, so like today, I just did shoulders and tries, and I did two sets of 5 reps at 80% of my max. And it's just, when it's under control, I can really start to feel, okay, your left's starting to, you know, slack a little bit. Am I putting the same amount of pressure on my feet? And a lot of times I can say, no, you know, you're not. So like if I'm doing upward rows and I feel kind of squirrely, the first thing I think of is, okay, am I driving both feet into the floor? And typically not, I'm leaning more right. So, but yeah, I would say at least 8 hours a week, and no more than that, because I mean, you know, I also don't want it to dominate my life. I mean, I still have a wife and 2 kids. I mean, granted, my kids are older. That's the same thing with riding. Honestly, if I could ride 2 days a week, I would probably almost feel somewhat guilty, because it's like, you know, this is all about you and you're not 18 anymore. So, I mean, you know, it's that balance, but I mean, I try and keep that reasonable, but you know, it is what it is.
It's crazy. The older you get, the mindset changes, right? It's just, even for me, I turned 40 last year, I think 41 now. You got it. Time's flying. But just in the last 5 years, just my mindset has shifted. Things become more important that weren't important before. And you have to, you know, as a vet guy, right? We have to shift our time. The biggest thing, a coach says this all the time, you can't ever get back time. And being efficient is the key, especially at our age. One of the things I wanted to ask you, Jeff, is you tend to, you know, you work out consistently, you ride consistently. What are you using? What resources or tools are you using currently to track your heart rate and your fitness level?
Well, so, you know, it might have been like on Hopper's show, or one where I first saw, you know, Complete Racing Solutions. And it kind of intrigued me, because I thought, you know, I mean, I have my system, which it's worked pretty good. But again, like I said, I'd be the first one to say, you know, I think genetically pretty blessed. But got in touch with Coach Rob and thought, you know what, let's give this a shot. And, you know, he started me up on the Garmin. I knew about heart rate stuff. You know, I had Polar heart rate. You know, I used Polar in the past. But I thought, you know what, I'm even on my, you know, on my website, I did a blog, you know, I think I called it So You Think You Want to Get Fit. And it just kind of started tracking this journey. And, you know, literally I started out with, okay, I want to be more fit on a snowmobile. I can either buy a turbo snowmobile and, you know, just pin it and hang on and yeah, it'll probably go fast. Or I can spend probably $2,000-$3,000 on fitness. You know, whether it's, you know, so I got the watch, I got, you know, I have high blood pressure, which I mean, I physically have a big heart, but it's strong. I mean, my resting heart rate's 43, pretty much across all last year. But I've always had high blood pressure, super low cholesterol, because they do, you know, check it. You know, I usually go twice a year, but, could never really figure that out. And that's the only thing I take meds for. But I mean, I thought, you know what, we're going to get the scale, we're going to get the blood pressure cuff, yeah, chest strap, pretty much everything that Garmin has. You know, even now, I was telling Rob the other day, my Wahoo kicker, it's not working. And I mean, you know, Wahoo, their customer support's not ideal. I mean, you know, it is what it is. So I'm thinking of trying that Garmin. You know, there's quite a few for sale around here on Marketplace, but you can get them actually pretty cheap. You know, they have a pretty big discount, but no, I mean, it's all Garmin. And then I'm working with Rod, you know, we can go through and see. And, you know, and I'd be the first one to say, you know, there's some nights where, you know, I mean, I have a pretty set routine what I do in the evening, just because I've learned how important sleep is. I mean, I was always the guy that slept with the TV on, you know, lots of mayhem, you know, go to sleep at 1-2 in the morning. You know, that's changed quite a bit. I mean, a lot of times I sleep in a separate room because I want it super dark. You know, it's colder. You know, and I've gotten to the point now where when I lay down, I can usually fall asleep within 5 or 10 minutes. It took a while to do that. And I tell everybody that, you know, they're like, I just be too hard. And it's like, you got to train yourself. You got to be patient, because it's not just going to happen. But no, so all the Garmin stuff, as far as all the biometrics and there's, you know, in addition to Coach Rob, I, you know, follow Peter Attia a lot, you know, some of the people that work, you know, do stuff with him. I mean, even like for my back. So every morning I do, you know, I was trying to think of the doctor's name. I was going to write it down, but I told Coach Rob at the beginning of this, you know, I was like, you know, write your name down so you don't forget it. Everything else on it pretty organic. But there's a doctor, a back doctor, he's from Canada. He's got a big gray beard, cool, super, seems like a cool guy. They call it the big three back exercises. And I do that every morning. You know, it's basically the bird dog, you know, planks on each side and a crunch. But I mean, short of that, as far as the actual, you know, just equipment, it's all Garmin. I did, you know, again, on Coach Rob, we had talked. I mean, You know, I have a small body massager that I actually bought from a place that sells roll recoveries because they're out of Boulder, which was like 30 minutes from where I live. Use the roll recovery a lot. But I mean, you know, it's just, for me, it's cool. I mean, I'm kind of a nerd with that stuff, but I mean, I can tell you, like, I go over, like, we go snowmobiling overnight and some of my friends see me pulling out the massager or this thing. They're like, that's, what are you doing? It's like, you know, for lack of a better word, if you want to do, I think what I want to do at 60 years old, I don't know any other way you're going to get to it.
Yeah, maybe you're absolutely right.
I just don't know.
Coach, I'm super jealous of Jeff. Resting heart rate of 43. Holy crap. I would love to get there one day.
Yeah, but you will, man.
And you got me beat there, Jeff, but I want to know what your max heart rate on the dirt bike is.
So, and I had this discussion with Rob. Because I don't want to say it's, you know, abnormal. Like I said, I just know physically I have a big heart. I've never really saw what my max is because I honestly been kind of scared just to push it that hard to see what would happen. But I can tell you when I'm spinning laps at Thunder Valley, I'd like to think I'm at probably 75% of what I can do. And it's probably 155, 160. And I mean, if I had to guess, I know there's the specific way you can tell what your max heart rate is. I'm just not prepared to do it. And really, I tell myself, why would I want to do that other than just to want to know? I mean, I think I'm in tune with my body myth. Like, I know zone 2 is pretty important to me. And I know my zone 2 is probably about 130. You know, I've never done a lactate test, but I can, you know, between perceived exertion and just kind of knowing my body, I think, as well as I do, it's above 120. I know that because at 120, I could talk like we're talking right now. But yeah, if I had to guess, my max probably maybe around 180, 185, but it was never, I could tell, even when I was 18, I'm sure it was never over 200. Because yeah, even a lot of times now, if I go to the doctor and they have a new nurse, you know, the first thing they'll say is your heart rate's really low. Is there something wrong? And it's like, no, you know, it's just, I mean, you know, the doctor will, you know, whatever, you know, do whatever. But I mean, like all the stuff that they test and all that, I mean, everything looks really pretty good. And I don't have a super high VO2. I mean, I probably, for my age, I do. The last time I had it tested was about a year ago. It was 51. So, I mean, and I wasn't pushing super hard just because I didn't want to. But yeah, so, nah, you know, sometimes when I tell people my heart rate's, you know, 43, I mean, there's sometimes after training, it'll go up 49. Sometimes it'll go to 39. And again, you know, I don't know exactly how it measures all, but I looked at it before we went on this, and it's 43 over the course of a year. Stress, you know, like me and Rob looked the other day, it was 23 over a year, which I have a friend that builds data centers, lives in Virginia, and, you know, his is probably, I don't know, average is 50, 60.
He's like, a year. Yeah. And Dan, I want to make sure for the sake of the listeners, this show is not sponsored. I'm not a brand ambassador of Garmin. I want to make sure everybody's crystal clear with that. The things that were mentioned earlier, like a Wahoo kicker, that is a stationary trainer where you take your rear wheel off your bike and it literally, it's an indoor trainer specific to the bicycle. You heard the mention of the Concept 2 rower, skier. This is literally, this is Jeff's show. There's no brand endorsements in this. Because I get this question a lot. Hey, Rob, what should I invest in? Whatever you're going to use. Because you can find something wrong with everything and you can find something good with everything. I'll give you a very brief example. A lot of people will say, well, the Concept 2 rower only works the posterior side of the body. Well, then jump off and do push-ups to work the anterior side. Well, bicycle only works from the belly button down. Well, jump off. Well, Jeff and I have even teased about it. Then do shoulder press while you're on the bicycle on a stationary trainer. Do some bicep curls. I mean, have fun with it. And there's no one piece of cardio equipment that's going to push all muscle groups, anterior, posterior. Nothing's you got to be, that's why, and anybody who's listened to us for any period of time, that's why I always say variety is the spice of life. Like you heard Jeff say, again, completely uncanned, unrehearsed, 10 minutes on the rower, 10 minutes on the Wahoo, changing it up because you use more muscle groups, you avoid that mental staleness. And then something else that I want to elaborate on as well, Dan, is, you asked the question about max heart rate. Please, for the sake of everybody listening, remember your max heart rate is specific to the discipline that you're doing. Motorcycle will always be the highest because of the amount of weight and the velocity. And then it stair steps down from there. There's a little bit of, maybe a little bit of overlap, but motorcycle will always be the highest. Running tends to be right below that. Concept 2 rower is going to be right in that area. Then you get into fat tire with no e-assist. Then you get into road biking. Then you get into, you know, swimming, and it just goes down from there. Actually, swimming, it will be the lowest of all of them because of the hydrostatic pressure. So it was a great question, Dan, that you had asked. I just want to make sure the listeners understand. Please don't hear Jeff's max heart rate on the motorcycle and say, oh, well, I've got to get to that number. It's completely individualized based on a little bit of genetics. You're not in bondage to it. Training background and history, injury background and history, and the idea of how much time do you have to train consistently. It's not as complicated as it sounds, but I do get some people that are like, well, I heard Jeff saying on your show that my max heart rate's 181 and I can't get above 132, or my max heart rate's 206. Is that a problem? No. There's a lot that goes into it. And I just contradicted myself. It's not complicated, but there are variables. I'll give you a very brief example. If you're dehydrated, heart rate's going to be higher than it should be. So that's why you have to look at your body weight in the morning and evening. Make sure you're hydrated. That way you can factor out, did that have some kind of an impact on that max heart rate number? But that's our job. You guys don't have to get caught in the weeds. That's our job to decipher the info. But I liked what Jeff was saying there. And also, just so people realize, Jeff doesn't train exclusively indoors, only during the winter. He's a major, in fact, in some of the weather that he goes and load, you know, gets bundled up and goes and hits the road bike up. Whew, it got below 70 this last week, man. I was locked in. I was completely cabined in. I'm not going outdoors. It's below 70 degrees. I can't go outside.
That's crazy. Sissy, coach. You're such a sissy. You're getting soft.
My blood is so thin, man. I'm a Florida boy. Born and raised here. I can't function after. I look like today's snowflake kids out there. I can't get out of the rain, man. It's cold. But no, what Jesse
said, about 45 degrees here is the lower limit for me to ride in with all insulated stuff, the insulated skins.
Yeah, I went a couple weeks ago to Fernley, Nevada to the Sandbox, one of Zeb's tracks. Okay. And it was 28 degrees, boys, and I rode. I rode.
It's your fault. That's your fault, man.
My hands were miserably cold.
Yeah. What was the humidity like?
Yeah, it was, I don't even know. It was pretty humid, though.
Okay, because that is the part that's the worst, you know?
Yeah.
Once that moisture is in the air. And again, I want to make sure that when we make a comment, let's lay a little bit more context. Moist, anything that's moist, like you've heard me say publicly, we don't want to use dry heat. When you're doing contrast therapy, you don't want to do dry heat and then cold. You want to do water submersion. Cold and water submersion, warm, because moisture will permeate the tissue. So when someone says, oh, I rode in Colorado, it was 27 degrees. Well, if the relative humidity is low, it's nowhere nearly as bad when there's a high level of humidity because of its ability to penetrate soft tissue. Because I've had some guys go, man, I'm just getting soft. I'm like, well, what's the humidity? Because if you're comparing apples and zebras, like you said, low humid environment, I mean, it's why you see people out snow skiing and snowboarding in a t-shirt. No humidity. So, and literally last week we were sitting here at 34, 36. I mean, you guys saw it snowed in Florida.
Yeah.
Right. The training facilities up in Cairo, Georgia, literally it was snowing. My son, younger son, lives in Panama City, and he showed me out the window. It looked like I was looking at Jeff's house. I mean, he had 6 inches of snow on his car in Panama City. It was crazy.
Coach, you don't think the government has anything to do with this, right?
100%. 100%.
You know I had to throw something in, Coach. You know, man.
Don't get Jeff and I started. We'll get on some conspiracy things where you're just like, seriously, folks, come on.
I got a couple other things for Jeff, Coach.
Go for it, brother.
Real quick, Jeff, you mentioned some of the cross training stuff that you do. You do a lot of cycling and stuff. What is your favorite? What is your favorite cross training to do when it relates to the motorcycle?
Thanks. You know, I do love cycling. And I think, again, you know, I have pretty big quads. Once I kind of figured out this is how you should pedal, you know, it's just like I was telling Rob probably a month ago on the Concept 2 lower. I finally did something correct. And I mean, like I said, I'll watch videos. Okay, this is how you do it. Well, with the Concept 2 lower, once I started using my legs a lot, my stroke rate went up huge and I wasn't working any harder. But it's probably cycling. I mean, but I can tell you, you know, The last thing my body personally is built for is running. And I still, first of all, I'm just physically, that's not what I should be doing. But after the ankle trauma, I never wanted to give that up. And I can tell you, I still try and run at least once a week for two reasons. One, that I want to just keep doing it. But the second is that in my mind, I can put out the same amount of effort on my road bike. My heart rate will be 130. When I run that same amount of effort, it's 155. And it's just puts me into a different zone. But I mean, I probably don't have one favorite. I mean, my favorite thing, honestly, is riding. I mean, I just, you know, whether it's the dirt bike, snowmobile, I mean, I'm always, you know, I love to have fun, but I always want to get better too. And I mean, like I said, a lot of times, you know, back when I used to race, I mean, I would never be that guy that would just go through the same turn over and over and over. It was just, you know, I'm here to ride, I'm riding. You know, I like hitting jumps, this is cool. Well, now it's different than that because it's like, you know what, if I'm not super comfortable going through this turn, I got to keep doing it. You know, and even if there's a bunch of people watching and I look stupid, before that would have bothered me. But it's like, now, you know what, because I know with anything, you got to be able to do it slow to be able to do it fast. And it's just, it's a bummer that I didn't really learn that until recently, you know, probably in the last 5 years, but I'm glad I learned it then. But it's something I can tell other people, just, you know, just, it's got to feel solid. And then once it does, but yeah, it's probably riding, but like I said, I really enjoy cycling. And I do enjoy the running, although, you know, when I run, you know, the next day, you know, I'm in the hurt locker, you know,
yeah.
And not just my ankles, but just my body in general, quads, because we talked about it, you know, unless I really want to do that 3 times a week, I'm probably going to get slower. And I don't want to do that, but I don't want to give it up either. And I mean, I just, like I said, I don't know. Even when I race, I would say I was pretty competitive, but I wouldn't wreck guys. And I mean, I would race with guys that were friends that would rep me to win. Like, that just wasn't me. But I mean, I'm more probably competitive with myself. I just want to get better. I just want to be better at this, no matter what it is. And in a lot of ways, that's good. And probably in some ways, it's not so good. But yeah, probably all of them. I don't think there's just one thing that if I had a chance to do, I would do other than what am I riding? You know?
That's cool. I got one last one. And Coach, this is kind of my own question because something kind of hit me talking to Jeff and something that happened this weekend. I was at the track. I was at Hangtown one Saturday. Great day. At the end of the day, I had a gentleman come up to me. Probably, I'm guessing. God, I shouldn't even guess. I don't want to offend this guy. He watches the show. He loves the show. But I'm guessing that he's, you know, late 50s, early 60s. And he came up to me and he said, Dan, I really love what you and Coach do. I love the podcast. I'm thinking about joining Coach Rob's program, Complete Reason Solutions. And I know, Coach, you don't like this. You don't like to get into this stuff and, you know, you don't like to promote yourself and because that's just who you are. But he asked me, said, you know, kind of what my opinion was on why he should join. And although all of us are quite similar, Jeff, as far as we're vet riders, vet racers, we love dirt bikes, some of our end goals might be a little bit different, right? And especially when it comes to the age bracket, I'm early 40s, you know, you're 60. Your goals and ambitions might be a little bit different than mine. But for a guy your age, what would you tell somebody else would be the benefits to join the program, and what has it done for you?
Well, so the first thing that someone does, I've had friends talk to me, you know, and I tell them, I know, yeah, this guy, you know, and a lot of times I just call him Rob because not half, but a lot of times when we talk, we're not talking about training, maybe talking about politics or who knows what, but all ask him, you know, well, first of all, you know, kind of what's your goal? And, you know, and then they know, they have to know, hopefully it's realistic or not. But I mean, what it can do is I think it can give you some structure, which I thought I had structure, but it wasn't really specific structure. And then just kind of be real. Okay, you know, how much time can I commit to this? I mean, you know, the first time with Rob, we were talking, you know, once a week for, you know, a half hour. And that worked pretty well for me for a while. And then, you know, business started getting kind of crazy and, you know, life gets in the way and it's like, all right, I need a break for a while because it's just, you know, it's not time well spent for me or for him. I mean, he's still getting the money, but you know, when you ask me, so how did it go? If I say, well, I didn't do anything last week. So, you know, let's, you know, talk about whatever. But I mean, I think if just what I would say is don't be one of those people that, you know what, I'm going to spend $1,000 a month at CRS. And that's really going to motivate me. First of all, you need to figure out, okay, what do I really want to do? And, you know, can I sustain it? Same thing I tell people with eating, you know, if you want to eat, you know, broccoli every day for, you know, the next month. Maybe you can. It's probably not sustainable. But I mean, I think what, if you know those things, I mean, you know, Coach Rob has a lot of information. I mean, you know, and just once I thought about, you know, working with him, I look back at all the other, you know, or not at least the videos that I mean, you know, I know you have stuff that's 10 years old. I probably didn't look at any of those on having, you know, swimming with, you know, a paddleboard and that, you know, I mean, someday it might be cool for me, but I mean, that really was what I was interested in. But I think if someone was, you know, serious, I mean, you know, give them a call. You know, the other thing I like about, you know, Coach Rob is that he's pretty straightforward. And I mean, and you'd like to think everybody, you know, today is, you know, about business and that, but I mean, there's still, you know, a lot of people. And I think, especially, I don't know a lot about this industry, but I see a lot of, you know, ex riders on that doing training in that. That may be great. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Columbia been doing it. Just like when people come to me, if they want me to do a, you know, a house or a remodel for them, you know, I always tell people, you know, whoever I'm competing with, don't let them cherry pick. You don't really care, you know, what they did, you know, 10 years ago or 20 years ago. What did you do recently? Let's go talk to that person and, you know, kind of from there, see, hey, maybe this guy's for me. Maybe he's not. But I mean, I think just the structure and it's really, at least to start with, I mean, everything is numbers driven. You know, there's no guessing. I mean, if you take, you know, one of the things I told Rob, I tell people, oh, you're thinking of eating better? Okay, well, first, you know, what's your caloric burn rate today? Well, you know, I don't really know. Well, this is a lady. She's done this for me for 10 years. You know, you go in there, you breathe into the mask, you know, calories, a unit of heat. She can literally tell me, if you sit on the couch all day, you know, you're burning 2,800 calories or whatever the number may be. That's where you start, because then you know if you're, you know, if you want to get the right apps and really, no, it doesn't take long. I mean, log in what you eat every day. Most of the time, everybody eats about the same thing. You know, people don't vary much. It's pretty easy to see. Well, you know, I'm eating 4,000 calories a day. I'm not doing anything. Maybe that's why I don't feel great. I'm not losing weight. I'm gaining weight. But all this stuff, you know, whether it's that or just the body measurements or, you know, you give time stuff. Okay. Like I said the other day on the Aurora, was like, man, this is just easy. My heart rate's the same, but my stroke rate's up. Then that makes it easier to stay motivated. And it's just, you know, when people go to the gym and, you know, they get some trainer that works there that just buries them the first day and you're sore for a week and you never want to go back. Everybody that I ever brought to the gym, I'm like, you know, just do something light. I mean, not going to feel like you're doing anything. You'll be a little sore, but you got a lot better shot at going back as opposed to, man, I got to go in tomorrow and this guy's going to beat me up again. And probably 50% of the people are going to be, I pass. But yeah, so again, a long-winded answer, but I mean, I think for any level, you know, certainly I don't know what Rob does for guys at the top level, but I know for the level that I'm at, it works pretty well for me. And I mean, like I said, I'm more of a numbers guy. I like being systematic. You know, numbers typically don't lie if you're doing everything the right way. I mean, you know, if I'm hydrating right, I know when I weigh myself at night, I'm probably going to weigh 2-ish pounds less in the morning. If I don't, probably didn't hydrate right. The other thing I can tell if I hydrate right, probably urinating a couple times during the night. Yeah, it's not ideal, but if I want to stay hydrated, that's just part of the game. And I mean, you know, I've read where, you know, pro cyclists, you know, that's just part of the deal. If you're hydrating how you should and you're putting your body under huge load, it's called your tissues, you know, they're going to be full of water all the time. And, you know, they're probably not going to take a break for 8 hours. So
well, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for, sorry I put you on the spot, but, and Coach, I'm sorry too. You are such a humble man. You never like to turn these things into sales pitches or anything like that. But at the end of the day, you have changed so many of our lives. And I don't think you realize it. And I don't think that you give yourself enough credit for it. So any opportunity that I can to have somebody share their stories and how the Complete Racing Solutions program has helped them, I'm going to do it. So,
no, I appreciate it very much. And I do appreciate the fact that the viewers allow for me to set context. You know, when I say something like, I don't believe in HIIT training, it's not based on what textbook says. It's based on where the people are at trying to do it. And we could go down anything nutritionally or athletically, mentally, physically, all the above. And that's why I appreciate the opportunity, because as you even just saw with Jeff today, whether it's reestablishing range of motion with balance, with force for a long period of time. It's not just a cookie cutter one way to go. There's always, you have to put it in the context. So I appreciate the kind words and I'm glad it's working. And, you know, like Jeff said, it goes beyond just coach client. It gets more into man to man, you know, male, female, what's going on, what's not going on, what could be influencing it. It's not just suck it up, buttercup, let's push through. And in that, and I say this on every single consultation call I ever do, I have to earn everyone's trust. Doesn't matter what I've done, I've got to prove it to you. And the only way I can do that is with results. So to Jeff's point, yes, if you want the credentials, they're there. They're cool. You can go on the website. I'm not going to kind of beat that drum. But when it comes to figuring out where you're at and where you want to go, that's our niche. And that's what we do differently. So I do appreciate the kind words and I love my job. I've got the greatest job in the world. So it's good stuff.
Yeah, but like he's not... Well, one other thing I would add to that too, Dan, before we hang up, that I would say with Rob, and this is, you know, I see him on YouTube, you know, probably know some, not know personally, but know of the circles that he travels in. And every time that I call him and he answers, one of the things that goes to my mind is, how does this guy even remember who I am with all the people you must talk to? And yeah, I mean, you know, my level of fitness for my age, that's, I mean, I would say that's good. I put a lot of effort into making it good. But in reality, I mean, with what I am and what I do, it's when he call or when I talk with him, it's almost like I'm his own client. And I mean, that's really, really hard to do. And that's some of the feedback that I get from some of my clients. And it's just, it's a pretty cool feeling. And even, like I said, even doing this show, when he asked me about it, you know, I'm thinking, well, yeah, I'd love to do it, but who would really care about what I have to say? I mean, maybe they'll listen, but I mean, that part of it, I haven't talked to any other trainers, but I'm pretty confident that would be a rarity to find. And I could be wrong. That's just my thoughts and from my experience of being 60 years old and the business that I've dealt with and people that I dealt with. That's not common. So shout out.
Yep, you are dead on. Much. You're dead on shit. Episode 10 of The Vet Show. Jeff Scott, thank you so much. Thank you so much to all of our listeners, all of our viewers. Make sure you guys like and subscribe. Make sure you guys continue to drop those comments in our YouTube section. Send us the DMs, questions, whatever you have. We love to hear it. Again, thank you. Thank you, Coach. Thank you for all your time today. Jeff, thanks for being a guest on The Vet Show. And we will see you guys on the next one.
Peace.
Thanks a lot, guys. Rubber side down.